We're good. Thank you. Well, welcome, everyone. We have a full house today, which is good to see. This is typically our, before we had a formal board and quarterly meetings, this is one of our annual meetings that we did have because we decide, we look at the year in review and then basically just make our annual pension contribution is made in December into our pension funds, and that was when we had the to decide on where to put our pension contributions. Does everyone have a copy of the agenda?
Mm-hmm.
Nancy has some if we don't. Of course, Mr. Schoen's here from Pierce Park Group, and we'll be doing the performance report for the pension and OPEB funds, and we'll talk about the annual contribution for the investments for the pension and OPEB, and then moving forward to next year, the 2013 meeting dates and goals for next year, and that's about it. It shouldn't be too long of a meeting. So we'll start with approving the minutes of August 2nd, which I believe were sent out back when we had the meeting, and then also as a reminder, and we'll just do a yay vote if that's okay. So all that approve the August 2nd, 2012 minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, approved. And welcome, Mr. Schoen, if you want to start with your
performance. And you won't have to say welcome stranger very soon because as of November 30th, we will have my wife and I have bought a house in Lewis. So
welcome to Sussex County.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, it's Susie said I need to recycle some of those fees that we're receiving. So, but what I am curious about is the proviso. She said if I'm one day delayed on my tax returns, that she gets to take the house. I'm curious about that law, you know.
There is that law.
Yeah, so anyway, we're very much looking forward to it. And my wife's already talking about being retirement home, so we'll see. But we'll be down here quite often. So
saw the light, huh?
Yes, she's shown it right in my face, and I picked it up. Yeah.
Did it fare okay during the storm?
Yeah, because we're actually... not on Lewis Beach, we're in Lewis, and actually outside in Pilottown area, right off of New Street. So, and they didn't get touched at all in the storm. So, but we were. I'm watching the Delaware weather more carefully than I had been before. So, especially Southern Delaware weather. So, but very much looking forward to it. So, in your book, you'll see a quarterly newsletter. So, I think that. Did this get emailed out also, Susie, or?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Not
so,
to my knowledge.
Okay. We just finished it late last week anyway, but our quarterly newsletter. I think we told you, might have mentioned to you that we hired the chairman of the economics department of the University of Delaware, Jim Buckowitz, as a consultant to our firm, and he writes the economic articles. Then we try to rewrite them so that we all understand what it says. I say it sort of kiddingly, but you know, obviously a very bright guy. You also see in the inside that we hired Ann Cummings, senior management position. She's head of operations. And then you'll see one of my mother's recipes in the back here. So she's rather proud of that. What you also see inside the book as we work through it is the pages. There's going to be a page on the rebalancing that there's money that's going to be available to invest. In the past, the amount of contribution was equal to what the distributions were, so that money was being invested all in short-term, you know, CDs and money markets. But you have for 2013, it's expected that your contributions will exceed your outflows. And so there's some that can be invested on a longer-term basis. So we were asked to make calculations and recommendations as to where we thought that actually it'll be $1.3 million should go. You'll also see an update performance report. We have an education piece and then an article that ties into the education piece. So, and Susie, you want to give me some time parameters?
Yeah, we want to have our meeting within an hour.
Okay,
yeah.
That's fine. I just
or less.
Yeah, as everybody has gotten to know that, you know, you get me going, and it's so I need to just know when it's time for me to. So we can easily do that. If you go to the bound report under tab 1, it's update on the market environment. Big issues for third quarter is that the global stock markets did very strongly in third quarter. Also, stock market did very well in the first quarter. Second quarter, it was down. It given back a fair amount, but not all the gains in the first quarter. But it, third quarter, it gained back what it lost in the second quarter. So all in all, so far this year to date, stock market returns across the world have been very, very positive. Okay. There's a lot of other things going on. You know, the Fed did QE3, which is quantitative easing. The intention is to drive down long-term interest rates. But QE3 is a little bit different than QE1 and 2. QE1 and 2 was to drive down long-term interest rates on all types of fixed income securities. QE3 was really, you know, targeted for the mortgage markets, to drive down long-term mortgage rates, okay, with the intention, hopefully, to stimulate more residential, you know, real estate, drive that on. And if real estate turns around, then you'd also see, you know, job, you know, many times that's a start of helping the economy turn around and adding to jobs. And if you add to jobs, then corporations would then do more hiring and so on and so forth. So it was much more targeted. The unemployment rate fell to 7.8%. It ticked back up the last reading a week or so ago to 7.9, but a little bit below the 8% level. We actually saw a job growth of over 160,000 jobs this last month, but unemployment rate went up. And the reason why unemployment rate went up is because there are more people looking for jobs. And the way that is calculated, it's not just the overall unemployment rate. It's the unemployment rate of those who are looking for jobs. So more people are sensing that there might be opportunities out there. So it actually drives the percentage of unemployment up, even though the number of employed has gone up also. Housing prices have definitely come off the bottom. Not sure if you've seen that here, maybe a little bit. We've seen a little bit more in Newcastle County and Chester County, southeast Pennsylvania. But the highs weren't as high there, but the lows didn't drop as low as here. You obviously had a bigger fall off in the real estate market here. That's why certain people decided it was a good time to buy in Sussex County. And low interest rates. You know, I locked in at 2.75%. Who would have ever thought you'd be at 2.75%? When I bought my first house back in 1985, I had a 15% fixed rate. I can't imagine why I ever did that, quite frankly. But that's how. So there's real incentive. And actually, as interest rates go back up a little bit, then I think you'll see more people jump in. Right now, people are still sitting back a little bit saying, well, might they go a little lower, a little lower. And then when they start popping back up, that's when I think you'll see more going on. Although asked to, I'm not going to prognosticate the effect of the election last night, nor am I going to prognosticate where the markets will be, but maybe give a general sense of some expectations there. But if you go on to page 2, we also talking about, you know, what are some of the howevers. So there's some positive signs out there. Absolutely some positive signs. But there are also some real concerns. The biggest one that you hear out right now is the fiscal cliff. Okay. What happens, you know, if Congress and the executive office don't come to terms, okay, and we step off that cliff and we you know, we have these, you know, everybody says we should balance our budget, which I totally agree with. But if you do it like that, it might slow up the economy and throw you into recession. So they want to look at a way to sort of ease our way toward that. Again, I'm not going to prognosticate whether that gets accomplished. You know, there's a lot of outcomes of it. But the longer it takes, the more uncertainty in the market there is. And the more uncertainty in the market, then the stock market goes down because there'll be a flight from the riskier types of investments, i.e. stocks, to the more conservative side of things. And we've seen this time and time again. So it really, if you watch the markets, they'll probably be a pretty good prognosticator as to whether there'll be a solution, what the solution will be, and what the timing of that will be. You know, there's some talk about some in Washington will intentionally allow us to fall off the cliff as a negotiation ploy with the understanding that, you know, in February or March they would resolve something. But the markets don't like that. They don't want uncertainty. So there has been some weakness in exports. Okay, even though the economy seems to be getting better, the concerns are that China has slowed down. Now China is stimulating their economy. They're doing some massive borrowing and infrastructure improvements also. And then Europe, what's going to happen with Europe? You know, again, I don't know, but I think that's why it behooves you, as you always have, is to take a moderate stance on things. Go, sure.
Question for you. When you talked about Europe, triggered the concern about LIBOR and certainly the fixing with LIBOR in some markets going to, what is it, the OIS as opposed to LIBOR. Will that, what kind of impact is that going to have? I mean, at the heart of a lot of this financing, is, if you dig down, is are those rates.
Mm-hmm.
What will that, what does that change, or what do you see that doing to some of our investments?
Well, I'd say nothing directly, but if Europe, you know, continues to sort of muddle along and don't, you know, one, it's like 1 week they resolve their problems, and the next week they haven't resolved their problems. And if it just muddles along, let's say, and then turns negatively, they, because you know Greece surely isn't out of the woods, nor Spain, nor is Italy, then what I'll say one positive is that money will continue to flow to the U.S. and toward treasuries, and you have a disproportionate allocation to treasuries relative to, I'd say, most plans out there by design, by intent. Okay, so that part can be positive, but the negative, if Europe, you know, goes into recession, you know, and certain parts of Europe definitely are in recession, you know, then it's less areas that we can export to, so it can hurt our domestic companies. Okay, it can hurt part of your portfolio to the degree its exposure is to Europe, either directly through investing in countries and companies that are domiciled in Europe, or just because exposure because of our companies who sell to Europe. So, you know, how strong is worldwide demand going to be? I wish I knew the answer to that. But again, that's why, I think I preach, and I think this is why you've always embraced the idea, let's not take too big a bet one way or the other. Now, how you partially protect yourself is that you have allocations to international equities, but your international equity managers have the latitude to go throughout all the rest of the world, say, other than U.S., the ones that are straight U.S., straight international equity managers. So if they think Asia's better, the emerging markets are better than Europe, they will disproportionately allocate those assets there. You also have some global managers through your OPEB fund and also through the part that's with the state. Those global equity managers have the ability to invest anywhere in the world where they see the best opportunities. So if they think Europe is not a good place to be, then they will weight more of that either to the other areas outside of Europe, anywhere outside of Europe, whether it's the U.S. or not, or non-U.S. So I'm not sure if that fully answered your question, but I think that's why we say, you know, take a car. But you have some level of protection against events there. There's also concern that China's going to slow down. You know, so if China's slowing down, what does that do? And if China's slowing down, you know, we don't like the idea of them buying our treasuries. But if they're slowing down, then they're not running as big a surplus, and so their demand for buying U.S. treasuries isn't good. So that could raise interest rates on treasuries. So you got the one force of Europe saying treasuries are a better one. China could be a negative against that. So I do sound like an economist, don't I? On the one hand, and on the other hand, but so. Right now, I'll take a look. I think there's some definitely some opportunities out there. I don't see us going down like we did in 2008. I'm not sure that we're going to take off like we did in the 90s. But I think you continue to drive down the road at a very steady, comfortable speed that you wish to do. Now a little bit on if we go on to page 3 and 4 about the markets themselves. So go to the top left-hand corner on page 3, and you'll see that there's the blue, the gray, and the green. And those are the equity markets or the stock markets throughout the world. The blue is the U.S. The gray or silver is international, but not including emerging markets. Remembering, emerging markets are considered, you know, Brazil, Russia, India, China, Eastern Europe, Latin America. Okay, and then the emerging markets, which are the green, which were the best performers last quarter. Year to date, the best performer actually has been the U.S. Okay, so you go on the right-hand side, 16.1% year-to-date return through the end of third quarter. Bond markets have all been positive, but you can see the U.S. bond market was up 1.6%. That's for a nine-month time period. You extrapolate that for the year, and that's about a little bit over 2%. Okay, and that's something we're going to talk about one of the I'll call it dangers or concerns going forward about being able to meet your actuarial assumed rate of return. So we talked about it a little before, but this is a very, very important issue, and we need to take some time to talk about that. Do note that even though that's positive and if it does that same kind of return, excuse me, I misspoke there. I said 1.6. That's not the year, that's the quarter. So I misspoke. It's 4% year to date. Okay. The developed markets are up 3.7% year to date, and the emerging market bonds actually are up 14.7%. Okay. Go down one, and you'll see U.S. equities. You see across the board, and the darker color are the larger company stocks, what we call large cap, that's capitalization. So, and the red are the growth stocks, the blue are the value stocks. So the way to read that, 6.4% over that dark red means the large cap growth stocks did 6.4% for the quarter. Generally in that area, you're going to find Apple would be a large cap growth stock, technology, healthcare. Okay. The dark blue is a large cap value, tends to be energy stocks, utilities, some financials. Used to be all the financials were there, not all of them are there now. And year to date, all of them have been double digit positive, the best being the large cap growth stocks. But what we do see here is that a little favor to the value side. The value side being the more dividend oriented stocks. And we see that again so far quarter to date. So it looks like, although the trend hasn't long enough to say for sure, this strong movement toward growth stocks that we saw last year and the first half of this year may be moving toward the value stocks.
Question.
Sure.
You had said that the healthcare is in the large cap?
Well, healthcare I put into the growth area.
Okay.
And then healthcare could be large, mid, or small, depending upon the size of the company.
Is that when you say healthcare, are these health systems or pharmaceuticals or what?
It could be both, you know.
What do we have a strong position in that within this?
Now, you have actually a fairly neutral representation across the board. You have a little tilt toward value. So if you split value and growth 50-50, you're about 55-45. You have a little tilt toward the value side. And the reason why you do, it's not a tactical decision on our part or your part or anybody else's part to say, wow, we think value is better right now. It's more because over time, value has outperformed growth. It's usually protected better in the down markets, okay, and it's had less volatility. And so why not, you know, if something's had higher returns, better stability, why not have at least a little bit more into that area? Now, if you go to the bottom, you can see the returns of each of those areas year to date. And the biggest winner so far, if you go year to date, that's the white on the right-hand side, is the telecommunication services. The worst one so far year-to-date is utilities. Okay. Going on to page 4, top graph is the yield curve graph. So the left-hand side is short-term treasuries. You see, if you go all the way down, it says 1MO, that's 1 month. There's a treasuries that will come due in a month. The far right-hand side says 30YR, that's 30-year, that's long-term treasuries. What you see is primarily is that the interest rates didn't change much on treasuries over the quarter from the end of June, okay, which is the blue line, to the end of September, which is the gray or silver. You see a little bit of down drop in interest rates in the middle from that year 2 to year 10 area. And therefore, that area was the best performer because as interest rates go down, bond values go up. But do note, we're talking about very low interest rates. You look at the, you know, the 5-year treasury, less than 1%. Okay, the 10-year treasury, you know, about 1.5%. Long term, those yields are more like 5 to 5.25. When yields are that low, and I know we've all been thinking for the last year or two, 3 years that interest rates would go up, but at some point things do eventually revert to the mean. They won't now. I'm not going to sit here and guess when they're going to go up, but eventually they will go up. As the economy improves, they will go up. And right now, the Fed is purposely, I'm going to use manipulating, maybe that's not a great word to use, but somewhat manipulating the yield curve to make the long-term interest rates lower. And the reason why they're doing that is because, let's say somebody wants to buy a home. Are they really concerned about the 1-year rates, or are they concerned about the 15 and 30-year rates? Or if a business is deciding, do you expand, okay, whether you're building a building or you're building a plant, is it the short-term rates that are important to you, or is it the long-term rates? Because you'd like to get lock into a long-term fixed cost. So it's the long-term rates that are going to stimulate the longer-term investments. Just a couple other things on the economy. You know, you see the second graph, you see the returns, different components. In the third quarter, each of those was positive, but the most positive were the ones that you see the green and the gold, which is the 5 to 7 year and the 7 to 10 year. So this area that is intermediate in maturity had the better return, and that's tied into what I mentioned earlier about the place where the interest rates came down was in that space. And again, as interest rates come down, bond values go up. Longer term for the year, you know, we see in the short end, and actually all the way up to 7 years, you know, positive but not very strong returns, and then over the rest of that, you know, roughly about 4.4% returns. So still positive on a fixed income. And then you see the breakout of which areas did best: government bonds, mortgages, TIPS, which are treasury inflation protected securities, credit, think of those as corporate bonds, and then the high yield. Okay. Any questions about the economy and the markets? So go on to the next tab. So right now we'll talk about the pension, and then we'll talk about the OPEB fund. So the portfolio gained over $2 million during the quarter, which represented a 3.9% return. For the year, approximately a $3.5 million return, which is 9.4%. Fund consistently outperformed the benchmark in down markets and underperforms in the up markets. I'll talk about that in a minute. The state piece of your portfolio, which is about 65% of it, had good long-term returns, but not as good quarter and one-year returns relative to their benchmark. Okay.
Could I ask, sure. What were the returns on the state fund?
Well, we'll get to that in a second.
Oh, it's in here.
Okay. Yeah, it's in there. I'll get to that in a second. Wilmington Trust had very good returns, remembering they're managing a very conservative fixed income portfolio for you, so they beat their benchmark pretty good. And you need to invest $1.3 million. That's what we talked about earlier. That's the excess contribution above what you're going to need for benefit payments next year, and we'll get to that. Looking ahead, are your actuarial assumed returns too high in this low interest rate environment and with the asset mix that you have? And we also should talk a little bit about, you know, is there inflation in the future? And if there is, are there things that you can do with the portfolio to help protect against that? You know, what impact does it have on the pension fund? And are there ways to help mitigate that exposure there? Okay. We'll get to that when I get to that education piece. Go to page 10. Okay. You look in the upper right-hand corner, and you can see that blue box. And that blue box measures how you do in up markets versus down markets. Now, the way to read that is you go off over to the left, and that's just about 90%. So the way to read that is if the market was up 10%, you do about, on average, about 9%. Okay. The down capture ratio is, and I'll just make a, we'll say that's about 75. That's a positive. So if the market's down 10, you're only down about 7.5. So you do give up a little bit on the upside relative to your policy index, okay? But you protect yourself exceedingly well in the down market. This is over the last 3 years, looking at month-by-month returns. Now, one thing I do want to caution, though, is you have, I'd say of all my county clients, and we have 11 county clients throughout Pennsylvania and Delaware, you definitely have the most conservative asset mix of all of them. Now, it's not like you're here and they're there, but you have the most conservative when you take into consideration your target to equities and your fixed income guidelines, okay? So in the up markets, relative to at least, I'd say, the average, you do give up some, even if you do your policy index. Then you're giving up a little bit more because of how you've invested it, the choices you've made. So just be aware that you will tend to lag others in the up markets, but will tend most of the time outperform others in the down markets, which is, I think, sort of the, you know, approach you've liked to have.
Are you, I'm not sure how to phrase this, bear with me.
Sure.
So, I mean, given the positioning that we have, is there a point at which we need to look at an incremental realignment of this portfolio to get a more balanced approach or to take more risk as the economy improves? And if so, what kind of time frame are you talking about accomplishing that?
Well, that's a good question. So I'll jump ahead a little bit to the education piece and then go in a little bit more detail. But I liken it this way. First off, you're assuming an 8% return on your portfolio. Okay, that's what the actuary is assuming. And with the asset mix that you have, and I'd say, and even the more, which is 60% stocks, and with the more conservative approach to who you've chosen as managers and your fixed income benchmark, I think it's the probability of making an 8% return is not that good. Okay, so think of it this way. Let's say you've decided, and I checked this out one time, I think it's about 65 miles to the canal, roughly, to the C&D canal. We'll say it, if you'll work with me on those numbers. So if you got in the car and drove 65 miles an hour, and you had to get there in 1 hour, you'd get there right in time, okay? And you're assuming with this 8% actuarial assumed rate of return that you're going to drive 65 miles an hour, but the reality is you're driving more like 55 miles an hour, okay? So you really have two choices. You can either drive 65 miles an hour or you have to leave earlier to get there on time, okay? And leave earlier means you need to change your assumptions. You have to say, like the hoes, we're not going to get there at 8, get an 8% return. We have to look more at like 7 and 7.5. And I will tell you my other, and it's not that these are just data points for information, so it doesn't mean that you follow what others do, but I can tell you from the article that we gave you and what I see out there and talking to actuaries, that even, I'll say, even our clients that are 65% equities, a lot of them are 7.5% assumed rate of return. So you're more conservative, but with a more aggressive assumption. There's a gap there. And I think, and so the question is, what happens if you don't do something? And I'll get to that in a minute. So yes, I am strongly suggesting you got to do either drive faster or leave earlier or some combination of both. Okay. What you also see on that page, if you go to the lower left-hand corner, you'll see that the reds, which are that's when the stock markets are down, every time over the last 3 years, which is three different quarters, you've outperformed your policy index. Okay? And that's what we would expect because how you've implemented things are more conservatively. Okay? When the markets are up most of the time, but not all the time, you've underperformed. Now, let's take your question a step further, if we may. To some degree, the piece that the state manages for you, they will take much more latitude in how they... So you may have decided you're going to drive 60 miles an hour, okay? And I picked that because you're 60% equities. But the state, they might go down to 50, and they may go up to 75. So they're going to be much more active in their decision of whether they're going to over or under allocate to equities. Okay, so if they're right, then that'll be good for you. If they're wrong, then it's a negative. So I will say that most of the time they've been right in their decisions. You'll see in a moment this past quarter and the year they have not been, but generally they have been pretty consistently. They've added some value through that. Okay. Go into page 12. Okay. Now, because there's so many pages, I'm not going to hit every page, but if somebody has a question about any of these, you know, stop me. On page 12, you can see your return. Okay, so let's go for the quarter. Your return was 3.9% versus your policy index of 4.4. Okay. Now, let me go down to the bottom, and then we'll work our way back up. The state was up 3.7%. So if your overall plan was 3.9, and the state was 3.7, the rest of your money did about 4.1, about more 4.2, 4.3%. Okay. And this is a time period where we actually would have expected the state to have done better than the rest of your money, because the rest of your money is more conservatively invested than the state's money is. Okay. And so we would expect them to outperform. Now, I'm not here bashing them, because I think they actually do a good job. I think they do a very good job. But this is part of the reason why I think it was prudent what you did several years ago, saying, let's give them, you know, the core piece of the money, but build around them, you know, with the other pieces to be a little bit more conservative with the rest of what you do. Okay. You look at that. So then now back up to the top and working the way down. So DuPont Capital was up 6.1 versus their benchmark of 6.4. Fidelity low price 7 versus 5.3. And then Wilmington Trust was 1 versus 0.6. Okay. And that's what I mentioned earlier, that they've really added some value relative to you know, what their benchmark is. And you can see actually for the quarter, year to date, and 1 year, they've actually beaten their benchmark pretty decently for something that was, there's not a whole lot of room for them to add value, but they have definitely done that. And we don't, in looking at their holdings, so one of the things we do is we look at their holdings and say, okay, sometimes firms can win, so to speak, you know, do better than their benchmark, but they're taking big risks to do that, okay? We don't see that. It's still a very conservatively managed portfolio. You know? And a good example of what I just referenced is I remember back in 2006, 2007, there was a bond manager out there who was very consistently beating their benchmark. And I remember with another client going and saying, I'm real concerned about this. And the client's like, why? They're beating it at half a percentage point every year. You know, and the manager's, you know, basically, I tell you, that said, who's this guy? What's he talking about? I said, I've been around long enough. They've got a lot of mortgages. I said, I'm real concerned. And they have these leveraged mortgages in there. I'll say I was fortunate enough that I convinced them to take half the money away from that manager, which is tough to do when the manager's beating your benchmark. I was like, why would you do that? Because you can go to the casinos, roll the dice, and hit. And is that good investing? No, it's not. So, and it turns out that bond manager is not in business anymore. So, because they got pummeled in 2008 and 2009. So, point being is we don't look at just the numbers of how they return; it's how they got there. Make sure that, or as best we can, make sure that they're not taking great risks in doing that.
This is where I think. I think the fixed income returns are low, but I know it's per our policy. But this is an area where the conservatism really shows, isn't it, on the fixed income? Would you think that?
Conservatism because they beat their benchmark or because of their returns?
Right.
Yes.
Because I think the fixed income in general of a mixed portfolio can be better if you can get off of some of those government securities, but still be within like treasury agencies or municipal or grade A, or you know what I mean, a little bit more mixed than I think it's 75%.
And I think that's a good point. So Wilmington Trust benchmark or hurdle that you're setting them for is a fairly low one,
right?
Because it's just government bonds. So they've done better than the benchmark. But I will tell you, for most of our other clients, the fixed income managers have done better than Wilmington Trust did, because they had a little bit more latitude not recklessly so. I mean, we still put some constraints in there, but you have definitely the most restrictive fixed income guidelines that I see out there. You know, and you know, I think you're getting enough flavor of me that I'm not Mr. Aggressive by any stretch of the imagination. So yes, it has impeded fixed income returns. And going forward, you know, the area that people have the most concern about is where treasuries are going to go, because treasuries, they're here. Where can they go? Those interest rates have to go up, and then think of it like if treasuries are 1% and they go up yield and they go to 2%, you might say, well, that's only 1% change. No, that's doubling of the interest rate. That can have a very dramatic negative impact on the value of those bonds. Now, one can say, well, if our manager holds those bonds until they mature, we have never lost. And yes, that's true, but the actuary, when they calculate each year as to what your asset values are and what your ARC or your required contribution is, they don't look at that and say, oh, we will price them at what they're going to mature at. We're going to price them at what they're valued right now.
Can I ask a procedural question? Because uh-huh. I'm still the Duke.
Sure.
Is there, when you're looking at the investment parameters, how are they actually changed, whether the group wants to take more risk, less risk, based on economic
Right.
projects?
We have an investment policy, and in the investment policy, that gets approved by county council, states what's allowable or not allowable.
Right.
And that they are a conservative bunch, and I do remember, Dave, you might remember, when we tried to go 70-30, and I guess it was in 08 or 09, and we even made a recommendation to council, and they had taken it back to 60-40 on the day of the vote. But that was a different time then. But that's an example of where our constraints lie. What we do is take the information that the committee approves and then take it back to them for the vote and then and a discussion. Now, I think one of the goals next year is to look at the investment policy statement as it's reached 5 years. I mean, we haven't had it all that long. A lot of this is, over the course of the pension, a lot of this is fairly new to formalize some things. So we'll take it back to see if maybe we can get some groundwork moving to open up that fixed income. But that's what we'll have to do. We'll have to take it back to council.
I guess and I remember that because I remember reviewing the policy, but I guess what I'm asking is, where is the flashpoint for changes or recommendations? Is it you? Is it this group? Is it our advisor? I mean, usually at the heart of every policy change or recommended policy change, it's somewhere. Is it the chief financial officer? So they have to recommend to us?
We would recommend.
No, we recommend to them.
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah, the committee would recommend as a whole to make a change to the policy.
And to get the committee to that point, do you rely on an annual, review or recommendation from outside, or is it something that's done internally here? Is the nucleus you and the exec director? I'm just trying to figure out where it starts.
No, it would be a committee decision based on information that from what the consultant tells us or... we think, from the information that we review and read and returns that we look at.
Do you ever commission a consultant to review your policy and based on projections? Maybe not you, but I'm just saying because you need an arm's length. Do you ever commission someone to review it and make recommendations or suggested enhancements or changes?
No, we haven't.
That's where I'm going with this. Yeah. I don't know if that might make some sense.
Yeah. We drafted, so it would be arm's length as your advisor that we would, the original policy that we drafted probably 4 or 5 years ago was not as conservative as the committee decided they wanted to get to. And I can tell you, on a spectrum from here to here, we probably, if this is conservative and this is aggressive, we probably wrote it here. And at that point, Sussex County wasn't comfortable being there. They wanted to be here.
Go back.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So the suggest, I'll use the word suggestion instead of recommendation, but our suggestion was to be, not to be quite as conservative as it ended up.
Using that same continuum, where is the average of the rest of your county government.
Of our county clients.
Using that same continuum.
We had put you at the same as we had other county clients.
So that's a conservative bunch, obviously.
It's a conservative. I mean, you know, if you know Lancaster County, you know, Lancaster County is a client of ours, York County is a client of ours. That's a conservative group, you know. But Sussex County decided, you know, it's where your comfort zone is also. Part of our job also is to let people know, to understand, okay, there's great value, and being conservative has served you well. So I want to stress this. But then people need to also understand that sometimes you give some up for that, and how much are you willing to give up? You know, if you never walk, I'll take the extreme. If you never walk, you don't drive down the road at 100 miles an hour, but you don't drive the road at 5 miles an hour. And so what's that right spot for you?
And I'm not saying they would be opposed to a different fixed income strategy at this point at all. I think it's worth pursuing, and it's worth recommending okay. Personally, I feel. And all they can do is do what they do in their discussion. But I think it's time to approach it again.
Okay.
What is our current policy on fixed income?
25% U.S. grade A bonds and 75% treasuries.
Yeah, it can't be any more than
I believe it's, I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
Yeah.
Okay. And the OPEB's the same way. I have it right here.
And actually, there's two things you should.
And before that, it was 100% treasuries. So even getting to the 25 investment grade is when we did did this policy statement.
Yeah. So talking about procedural things, you really have two procedural things. One is, what does the policy call for? And then what are the guidelines specific to that manager? So in the case of the pension fund, your guidelines actually are a little bit broader because you don't have any control over what the state does. So we said, here's the guidelines for the overall pension. But then you want to look at what are the guidelines in the contract with Wilmington Trust. And those are the ones that say, you know, no more than 25% non-treasury.
Non-treasury include that. Corporate, or is it only?
Yeah, it includes corporate mortgages.
25% corporate now.
Yeah. Let me.
But it has to be grade A. It has to be the top of the crop.
Investment grade.
Right. The other thing is, on the state pool, they have a fixed income portion, which I'm sure on their policy is maybe not as conservative. So
that is correct.
We do get a little piece of that.
Oh, absolutely, you do. Yeah.
My concern would be if we went with longer bonds, just like you were talking about, and interest rates go up and the economy improves, no matter what kind of bond, you're going to take a loss.
And right.
Stay short like we're at.
Yeah. So there's two issues then. One is the duration or maturity of the bonds, and the other is the sectors they're allowed to invest in. So you might stick with the same maturity and duration. I absolutely agree with you that, you know, it doesn't behoove you to be in the long bonds. Okay. But do you allow the manager a little bit more latitude to go into some, you know, mortgages and corporates a little, you know, not wildly so, but give them a little bit more flexibility to add some return, because the spread differential, meaning the interest rate difference between, you know, corporates and treasuries, is enough that you can pick up some additional yield. Now, we have provided Susie a draft. We wrote the investment policy statement, and I think it was 07 or 08, 07, I think. So we did review that last year and provided a draft which had some cleanup in it, but maybe at the next meeting it would be a very good time to talk about, you know, about the fixed income piece, and do you want to allow some latitude, you know, that it doesn't have to be 75% in treasuries. Ultimately, it's where your comfort is. You know, you might say, no, that's where we're still comfortable. Just have to understand what the trade-offs of that are.
Thank you. I didn't mean to derail the discussion.
No, I think it's
the background, you know.
Actually, I think these are the meaningful discussions that the committee should have is its policy, you know, and things like that, you know.
A few years ago, I don't know if this was mentioned, but we were at 70%, or the policy was 70% equities, right, stocks. And then
they,
we switched
it
to 60, yeah.
Yeah.
And after the stock market crash and all that, I think there was a lot of concern that we'd lose anymore.
Well, what do you find others doing in light of the fact that interest rates really from here can only go up? You don't know how fast and how soon, but are folks in choosing conservative investments other than straight bonds in light of this?
Well, and actually this is a discussion that I'm having, say, with a lot of our clients, because it is a concern. Even if your actuarial assumed rate of return was 7.5%, you know, you still have the same issue of that, you know. Well, let me back up. The actuary assumes about 10% return, 10.25% on stocks, about 5.25% of bonds. Say if you're 60 or 65% equities, you blend that together, it gets you to about 7.5%. Okay, that's in a normal situation. Okay, now your allocation to equities are a little bit lower, that would bring it down a little bit more. And then if bonds, if over the next 5 to 10 years, if you only expect bonds to do maybe, say, 2.5-3%, you know, your assumed rate of returns probably should be at most 7. Okay, so what some of them are looking at, one is I'll say opening up what the bond managers can do a little bit more, allowing them a little bit more flexibility. For example, and this is not a recommendation for yourselves, it's just to give some examples. One is allowing their bond manager to do up to 10% of their bonds in international bonds. Okay, not to have an explicit allocation to that where you said we're going to put 10% bonds, but the manager, if they think they see some bonds, non-U.S. bonds, they like, they can do that. Or maybe up to, say, 5% in high yield. Personally, I don't like high yield a lot, but if a manager is good enough and they can say, oh, go in, but we have the flexibility to go back out. So they're opening up those. There's several different ways you can allow the bond manager more opportunity to add. Second thing that they're looking at is...
Those would be current yield tactics, wouldn't they?
Yes, but put in the hand of the manager, who hopefully is, any board, a committee or board like yourselves, wouldn't meet often enough and have time enough to say, oh, it's right. It's December 7th. We better get out of high yield today. So you put that in the hand of the manager. But you put some pretty fairly strict restrictions on them, saying, look, you can't go 100% there, but if you want to go 5 or 10%, we'll allow you to do that, okay, to pick up some additional yield. Okay. So that's one approach. The second approach is to look at actually what's known as GTAA, a whole other term, but it's a Global Tactical Asset Allocation. That's a mouthful, but those are where managers have the ability to invest anywhere in the world that they like. So they can go into U.S. and non-U.S. stocks and bonds. If they like commodities, they can go into commodities. They have some flexibility, and they put maybe 5 or 10% in a portfolio like that. You are getting that, some of that, through the state plan now, just so you know that. A third approach is looking to more higher dividend-oriented stocks, higher yield. They tend to be, but not always, the value-oriented stocks, which we tend to like a little bit more anyway. But then you get a little bit more yield that way through the higher dividend-oriented stocks. And then the fourth approach we see is what's known as a low-vol approach, that there's some managers out there now that say, look, we will manage stocks, but we're going to manage it to have a very low volatility. So we're going to give up quite a bit in the up markets, but we're really going to protect you in the down markets. And what they'll do is they'll take some from the bond side and some from the stock side and allocate that to that area. So there's a number of potential different solutions that, if you'd like me to, in between now and the next meeting, we can say, hey, here's some ideas that you might want to look at and say, and then decide, okay, what are the areas you want to explore further? There was a silver bullet out there. I'd love to tell you what it is, but there's not, but part of it, and I'll go back to what some of the premises, is this actuarial assumed rate of return. Because what you don't want to do is if you say, wow, we're at 8%, we've got to be 70 or 75% stocks to get there. I mean, if you do the numbers, that's really, really it need to be. I couldn't advise somebody to go to that level of allocation. So you have to decide, well, maybe we just need to drive a little bit slower. We need to leave a little bit earlier. But maybe it's some combination of both. Maybe getting a little bit, I don't like to use the word aggressive, but a little bit more assertive in your investing, but a little bit, but also bring down your expectations still.
I think we maybe we talked about this last meeting about maybe asking the actuary to give us some idea of what they, that would be with the next report or what, but what would happen if we went with 7.5% or 7.75% assumption versus 8%. Maybe it might be a good time to look at that with an in and up market, you know, when we're doing a little better than 8% right now.
But to prepare for what we, I think, is going to come, I think it's a, the answer is a little bit of both and not putting all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah.
I would believe.
Yeah. I agree.
And I agree with Dave that get numbers, you know, actually get the actuary say, okay, if we change it to 7.75 or 7.5, this is what it's going to mean to the ARC. This is what it's going to mean to the balance sheet, okay? With the new GASB regulations, it's going to impact your balance sheet, okay? It's one thing, it'd be wonderful to say, wow, we should be at 7, but the pain of being jumping all the way to 7 might not be tolerable. So you might look at increments, and the best time is exactly as you say, when the markets are up and you've gotten some actuarial gains from then, instead of, you know, lowering your ARC, instead what you do is leave it where it is, but change your assumptions now. So it's, I agree with absolutely that this year would be perfect.
And the timing's good because our actuary year's calendar, and I think we, if we have a, like a late January, early February, we can do it all in time for that to affect the budget.
Right.
So whatever their ARC comes up to be, and that we would, you know, we need that number, is what I'm saying, because we're coming up on the end of the calendar year.
Mm-hmm.
So that might work out well.
I think it's a more dynamic approach that's going to make this work for everybody in the long run. I think the plants that I've seen that have done the worst have been the ones that tend to take that little snapshot and hope the picture looks the same in 5 years.
Right. They don't do
and
anything.
It doesn't anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Very good point.
That in motion. So we didn't, we were below the policy, our own policy index.
Yes. Yes. And I say the predominant reason is the state pool didn't do as well this quarter. Now, if you go to page 13, we just got this yesterday from them. It does take them a little longer to gather all their data because they've got assets in a lot of different places, and then they have to calculate that for all the different participants in the state pool. But you can see, if you go down to the bottom, you'll see that they have the private equity, and you can see that for the quarter, that was down 1.6 versus, you know, I mentioned earlier, a lot of the equities were up 6-7%. So private equity for the quarter did not do as well for them. For the year to date, actually, it was very strong, you know, in the 1 year and the 3 years. So not saying that's a bad investment. It's just a timing issue there. They also have hedge funds. So private equity is about 17% of the portfolio. Hedge funds are almost 5% of the portfolio. You know, this is another reason why you have money with the state and then money outside of the state, because, you know, hedge funds, if they do well, can do very well, but also have periods that they, you know, don't do so well. So I think it's a nice combination you did there. When we get to the OPEB, though, I'll mention you do have this piece that's a little bit more aggressively invested, which is the state, okay? Then you have your piece that's conservatively invested. When you get to the OPEB side, which I would argue could stand to be more aggressively invested than the pension because of its funded status, it's actually more conservatively invested than your pension because you don't have that more aggressive piece like you have with the state. So we'll get to that.
Do you do a report of net, which are, shows these returns net of fees?
We do that. We have a page that we do, and we can provide that to you. If you go to page 14, we show you the fees of each of those. We have a page that we calculate and we can provide in the report if you'd like. It's sort of like, okay, so how many pages do you want? But we do gross of fees and net of fees.
I was just thinking one more column would, you know, on an annual basis, so you don't have to do another page. It's just, it's just nice to look down and see if you're, you know, the Delaware retirement system, year-to-date basis is real good, and it's
the drops down
below 10.
Yeah, the format would be a separate page, and I'm glad to put in another page. That's okay.
If they don't need it, I don't need it. I was just curious.
Yeah, because we'd want to show you net of returns, not only the total fund, but each of the managers also.
Is there any particular reason why the state pooled fund would have 7.5% in cash?
We asked them about that. In fact, we were on the phone with them on Friday, I think he said. Right now, that's part of their intent to have shorter duration fixed income. So that's why it is actually a decision, because they as was mentioned earlier about should you have shorter term bonds. Well, that's part of the shorter term fixed income allocation.
And they're fixed income.
The other side of it, though, is it's yielding nothing. So that's one of the difficult things. You know. I believe a good long-term decision is to have short fixed income, not long, because interest rates will go up at some point in time. The negative in the short term is that the yields on short term is basically nothing. So is it better to get no return, but you know you won't get a negative return on cash? Versus getting a return, but when interest rates turn, they could turn against you hard. So, the other thing to note is the state pool is a more expensive way to invest, but that's somewhat understandable. Private equity is going to be more expensive. Hedge funds are going to be more expensive. So. Mm-hmm. Okay. To be cognizant of everybody's 1 hour time limit here, why don't I? There's information on all the managers. The quick snapshot on the pension side is I think each of DuPont's doing what you expect them to do, Fidelity's doing what you expect them to do, and Wilmington Trust has had a very good quarter and a very good year. So we have no quibbles with any of them. If you go on to page 3, which is the OPEB fund, the story doesn't change too much. You know, absolute dollars change. You gained $850,000 year to date, $1.7 million. The investment performance has much improved. You know, remember, you made a bunch of changes, okay? And that was, you were somewhat restricted or constricted as to what you could do when you went through that search process with the changes that you've made. And procedurally and by changing the managers, you were able to get rid of the couple managers that weren't doing well for you and add ones that have done well for you. The other thing that helped performance this quarter is, if you remember, it wasn't just changing the managers, but you also took some money away from your small cap manager. The observation I made to you is that although we like small cap, is you had too much in that area. And so you took some away from that manager, not as a punishment on performance, because you just had too much allocated there. And at least for the quarter, that was beneficial for you because the larger company stocks outperformed the smaller company stocks. Okay. Now there'll be some quarter where you'll say, "Wow, geez, we wish we had small cap because it did better," but you had too much in that area. Yeah. Okay.
I'm pleased to see that.
Okay. And then looking ahead, perhaps we might want to have some more mid cap in there. Now you might say, "Well, Michael, you're talking about small cap and large cap." Mid-cap are those mid-sized companies, okay? I call them the Goldilocks, not too big, not too small. Over time, those have been the best performers, they've had the kind of returns that small caps have had and more of the volatility of the large caps have. The large caps tend to be more conservative that way. And then the other issue, same as the pension, about your actuarial scenario returns and the low interest rate environment and the asset mix.
I have a question. The new ones that we selected certainly aren't anything at this to the benchmarks. Now, is that because we're at a short-term nature and we should not look at them that way because we just, within the last 6 months purchased them, like the DuPont Capital scenario back in the pension fund. As soon as we bought it, the bottom dropped out.
Yeah.
But we hung in there. Because I'm seeing, BlackRock's new and the Vanguard dividend, but they're not at the benchmark. But is that because of the timing of purchase and allowing it to work?
Yeah. So keep in mind, you got it in August, okay?
Right.
So, but Both those managers are ones that we would expect to do better in the down markets, not as well in the up markets, okay? They're both value-oriented companies, okay? In fact, if you go to...
Because the two we kept, the Dodge and Kopp and Harding, they continue to go over the benchmark.
Right. And Dodge and Cox is one that we would expect to do well in the up markets. So just like any, and you know, bear with me, I like my sports analogies, but any good football team or baseball team, so I'll take baseball. You want some home run hitters and you want some singles hitters, okay? Dodge and Cox is a home run hitter. So when the market is really good, they should outperform, and they did, okay? When the market's really good, I'd expect Vanguard, Dividend Growth, and BlackRock to be positive, just not as positive, you know, as an up market. But on the reverse, when the markets are down, we expect to see the opposite. It so happens, if you go to this one page, again, this is just a one-month snapshot, but it's in all the pages I gave you. Okay. We said, okay, so what happened during the month of October? Okay, and this is for your OPEB fund. We don't have this for the pension because the state just gave us the end of September. We don't have October's for us yet. And you can see... Now, BlackRock only did about, you know, well, down 0.6 versus 0.5. Vanguard Dividend Growth was down 1.2 versus 1.9, exactly what I was, you know, expecting them to do. Ridgeworth actually was positive. Again, only a month, but at least gives us a snapshot of, and the market's not down hard over that time period, but it gives us a little something to look at. And look at Dodge and Cox. They were the surprise, but a surprise on the positive side. Normally, when the market's down, again, it's not down a lot, I would expect them to actually underperform, and they outperform. So no manager will consistently all the time do what you expect them to do, but what you hope for is over time, consistently. If you recall, Dodge and Cox last year had a bad year. This year, they're having a great year. So it's the combination that you're looking for of all those things. Okay. So... Since I've already used up my hour on performance, you know, I don't. If I was looking from so as I mentioned on the pension side, wouldn't change any managers. On the OPEB side, what I'd like you to think about is maybe adding a little bit of mid cap into the portfolio, mid sized companies. Okay, and there's a pretty easy way to do that. You can actually buy an index fund. Okay, and.
Okay, so thank you. I don't know if any other comment or discussion might come in naturally when we go to the next.
Yeah. Just one question, if I may, on page 30.
Sure. Okay.
The OPEB, it looks. I'm looking at that chart on the upper right corner. It looks like we're in the a bad quadrant there, and I'm wondering whether what we've done with. BlackRock and Vanguard Dividend helps us move that box over toward the left.
Yeah, I sure hope so. So if you recall, it, you know, you were constricted because of your process of who you ended up with when you went through it. We all know that, okay? And that's part of the reason why, you know, why you're there. The intent of making that change, but I would also suggest another change also. So you want to digest what you could do. That by adding, you know, getting rid of a couple of the managers that want to get rid of, doing those other changes, that will drag you over to the left-hand side. Perfect world, the upper left-hand side. But if not the upper left-hand side, at least the lower left-hand side, you know. It's tough to get in the upper left-hand side. It's tough to beat the market on all the up times and beat it in all the down times turn. Right. But to move that over there. But that also gets to why I mentioned, you know, our recommendation is that you do add some mid-cap stocks to the portfolio. What you have right now is you have the largest ones, and you have Ridgeworth in a small space. But historically, the best performer of all of them has been the mid-sized companies. And you might say, well, why is that? You know, the reason why, at least it seems to be, is that they haven't gotten so big that they can't continue to grow. You know, how much bigger can Apple get? Every time I say that, they keep getting bigger. But that was true of Microsoft. It was true of Exxon. They can't. There's It's only so much bigger they can get, okay? In the economic downturns, it's the small companies that are the ones that hit the hardest because some of them don't make it through. But the largest companies and the mid-sized companies, even if they're smaller, they don't go out, okay? So that mid-sized space is, and I'd say our clients that have a higher allocation to mid-cap are our best performing clients of them all, okay? We didn't bring that to the table because there were more important things we wanted to take care of first with sort of getting rid of some of the dead wood and replacing that. But that would be our recommendation is to add a mid-cap index in there as part of the portfolio and just take some away from the other managers, you know, proportionately.
What percentage or what are you recommending for an allocation for mid-cap, and what fund is like a Vanguard mid-cap index fund or something?
Yeah, there's a Vanguard mid-cap index fund, and actually let me look at my style cap page here. So I would say, you know, 5 or 6% of the portfolio. And the nice thing about it, an index fund, it's very inexpensive. So it actually would lower your costs some more. And I would take that, I'd probably say 2% from Ridgeworth and I'd take 2% from Ridgeworth, 4% from the Russell 1000 index fund, and then put that into the Vanguard mid-cap.
And Vanguard mid-cap is a new one, new index.
New one to you.
Yeah, okay. That's what I meant.
Now, why don't we put dollar amounts to that, which might be better. Let's say your portfolio is just about 20, well, it's coming up on 25 million. Let's just say $1.4 million or $1.5 million. You know, either one of those numbers. $1.5 million rounds off easily, but $1.4 million is okay also. So you could do it this way. Put $1.5 million into the index fund, take $1 million from the Russell 1000 value index and $500,000 from Ridgeworth.
And that's what to rebalance a little bit more appropriately.
Get a little bit more mid-cap exposure in the portfolio.
Cap exposure.
I mean, I look at it as, boy, over the last 10, 20, and 30 years, if this has been the best performer, it's not just over a little time period, but very consistently, the mid-cap has been the best area. Why not, you know, don't go overly aggressive with that, but why not, you know, if that's been the best performer, why not have a little too much in that instead of a little too little? So again, the suggestion would be take $1 million from the Vanguard Russell 1000 index fund, $500,000 from the Ridgeworth small cap value, and put $1.5 million into the Vanguard mid cap index fund. Got a question or a vote?
I know we made, with this, would we make, if the committee was interested in making this recommendation, does that recommendation go to the council now?
Oh yeah, it'll go to the council when I take in November's. But while we're talking about that, just have this worksheet in front of you, which will get us, it's kind of all going to tie in now, because we'll make the contribution. And
yes.
The OPEB fund, again, when we make our contribution, we decided last meeting to pull it annually to reimburse the general fund, and we're going to do short-term investment. So you can see the OPEB doesn't have excess to invest right now. So what it would be, it would be a rebalancing inside. So we're okay with taking it from one and going to the other because we're pretty much breaking even on OPEB with what we need. And what we'll do is we have a money market or whatever kind of short-term CDs we can, you know, we'll work that out. But we don't need it to invest excess. So we can clear the OPEB up and make all that one sweet right now. Everybody has a motion.
So what What are you asking for information for?
Well,
I'm sorry.
What I handed out shows the cash balance, the contributions that are budgeted, the expenses that I need to pull to reimburse the general fund for pension, and what's the excess. The OPEB, pretty much the contributions equal what the cost is. So, you know, it's a short-term type thing. So that only thing that we would do with the OPEB, unless somebody else has a different idea, of course, the only thing we would do is rebalance within the portfolio.
Well, you might have two motions. One is the rebalancing of the portfolio. And the second one would be how you're going to, even though you're not taking money in and pulling money out, it's how is that contribution going to be invested over the next year? So it's going to be invested into short-term securities.
Right.
I move that we recommend investing the OPEB 2013 contribution in short-term cash.
I get a second?
Due to the cash flow needs.
Second, we have a motion to invest the 2013 pension contribution of $2,106,808 into the pension fund to be used in short-term cash to meet our needs. And
you said pension, you meant OPEB,
right?
OPEB. Mr. James?
Aye.
Mr. Baker?
Aye.
Mr. Lawson?
Aye.
Ms. Brewington?
Aye.
Mr. Leahy?
Aye.
Mrs. Messick?
Aye.
And I vote yes. Motion carried.
And then you'd want a second vote on.
Is there any? I guess. What's everyone's thoughts on mid-cap point investment?
I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, I think it's good to.
Sounds good.
Get more, you know.
I'd ask if you would forward a fact sheet.
Sure.
On the fund that you have in mind as a follow-up to us. I don't know that we need that to vote, but I'd like to have the sheet.
History of returns,
yes.
And all performance.
Yeah,
I think the fact that it's also a Vanguard fund and an index, would have a low rate, and then basically it's the same as any other index fund for mid cap. And I agree with you. It'd be nice to see that.
And just in essence, you're going $1.5 million. You're moving just from one Vanguard fund to another Vanguard index fund. So
simple. I do like your idea about looking into the bonds, because I mean the yields that we are getting on U.S. Treasuries currently are so pathetic. I mean, if we could assume maybe a little more, I don't want to call it risk, but you know, diversify elsewhere and pick up a few more tenths or points or whatever to potentially, you know, to be a little less restrictive on our bond side purchasing, like as has been mentioned. I don't know what you think.
I agree.
For later discussion.
What I could do is maybe draft some language, send it to Wilmington Trust also so they can look at that, and then say, here's what we would suggest.
Or some choices.
Choices, sure.
Right,
absolutely.
What we can do to broaden that, some options that, you know, we can talk about at the committee and make recommendation.
And we need to change the investment policy statement to reflect that or not.
I think we do. We're going to have to open it up.
Nothing radical, but maybe I think we could do better.
I'll check. Yeah. I don't know how tight. I think it's pretty tight.
Yeah. And then the contract with the manager would probably need to be changed. There's safe guidelines within their contract, which are not exactly the same as the policy statement, because the pension, as I mentioned, the investment policy statement for the overall pension is more broadly written because of the state, you know, what the state's doing with it. But then what Wilmington Trust manages is more restrictive than the investment policy statement itself. So it'd be both components. And we would take care of that. It's part of our.
So I'll make a motion then to change the allocations in the OPEB fund to add allocate $1.5 million to the Vanguard mid-cap index, taking $1 million from Vanguard Russell 1000 and $500,000 from the Ridgeworth.
Okay, we have a motion to do a rebalance in the OPEB, as Mr. Leahy stated. I have a second?
Second.
Second. Take a vote. Mr. James?
Aye.
Mr. Baker?
Aye.
Mr. Lawson?
Yes.
Mrs. Brewington?
Aye.
Mrs. Messick? Mr. Leahy?
Aye.
And I vote aye. Motion carried. Okay. And that, along with the recommendation of the pension contribution, that will go to council with me also in November, because I'll get that approved. So on to the pension fund. We do have a contribution, $3.1 million budgeted contribution for 2013, and we do have cash in there to invest, and that's mostly because we had CDs slowly come and due over the last couple of years, as that was the strategy of that short-term investing. So after we take away our expenses of what we'll need for the general fund, of course, we pay annually, that, you know, gives us a longer time period. We have a little bit of excess there for investment. And your recommendation is?
So that's one of the handouts. Okay. It says Sussex County Pension on it. Okay. I'll tell you what it is, and we'll explain why. So of the $1,000,003, $1,150,000 would go to Wilmington Trust, $120,000 to Bond Capital, and $30,000 to Fidelity Low Price Stock Fund. And you might say, well, Michael, why would you give so much to bonds if the expectation of bonds is not so good? It's because your investment policy statement calls for 60% stocks, 40% bonds. And of the piece that the state's not overseeing, you're more like around 62, 63% stocks, because the stock market went up. So to bring yourself back in balance, you know, unless you were ever to change that 60-40 split, but since that is what your policy is, that means you need to give more to the bond side and less to the stock side. And it's really as simple as that, you know. And then because DuPont has, you know, and then of the $150,000 left over, we want more to go to the large cap side because, you know, DuPont has, you know, more of the assets than Fidelity does. So to be proportional there also. So
it's a basic, the excess cash and the rebalancing at the same time. We're using the investment to rebalance.
That's exactly right. You're taking that opportunity to rebalance back to your targets. If just, you know, if it had been the reverse, if bonds had outperformed stocks since the last time you rebalanced, you'd be giving more to the stock side. Yeah.
Does our policy address timeliness of rebalancing? Does it mandate annual rebalancing?
I don't know that it uses a word like mandate, but I think it suggests that an annual rebalancing, and typically, or at least looking at it, when the contribution comes in at the end of the year.
Yeah, and you actually, now that you're getting quarterly reports from us, every quarter we're looking at that. And so what it does is it has mins and maxes. So the equities can't go above 65 and below 55. So
right. It
just so happens that you have excess cash that allows you to do rebalancing. But let's say it was in the middle of the year, a huge run-up in the stock market, and you're up at 67, 68% stocks, then we'd be in here telling you need to take money away from stocks and give it to bonds because you're outside of what your investment policy statement permits. Sometimes it's sort of counterintuitive because stocks have done so well, or conversely, after the market's gone down. But that's right when the time you want to, you know, you want to sell high, buy low. So there's not a specific time specific. It's when you go get to the extremes, or in this case, where you have cash that you need to invest anyway.
And it does address it, and it just says that the committee shall review it. You know, it doesn't strong. You will rebalance. You know, but if we have something in mind for the fixed income down the road, and we didn't want to put the $1.1 million because we think in February we might have a greater latitude or the next meeting, it doesn't say that. I think that's appropriate within our policy statement, because we are addressing the rebalance just by having it on the agenda and talking about it.
I don't oppose this at all. It was more an information kind of question than anything else.
Susie, would you recommend that this may be a time for us to consider a review of our policy for 60-40 split and bring that back to council at some point in the future?
Yes, I think that's going to be the goal of 2013, is because it does address in the policy every 5 years the committee shall review just to see exactly what we're talking about. Should something be tightened, loosened? So we will be doing that.
Okay. I believe Mr. Cole and Mr. Phillips were, at the time, because things were not going well, that's when they really, they're both pretty financially savvy, and they both, I remember, mentioned that.
Right.
To lower it. I mean, of course, now with the new environment, they may look at it differently. But,
it's time to address it again.
It made sense then. I mean,
yes, it's time.
You don't want to keep going downhill, you know.
Right.
So.
Anybody have a motion?
I move that we approve the recommendation for rebalancing the county pension fund with the fiscal 2013 excess contribution with approximately $120,000 invested in DuPont Capital, $30,000 Fidelity low price stock, and bonds through Wilmington Trust, $1,150,000.
Motion, is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion to rebalance the pension portfolio with $1.3 million, $120,000 DuPont Capital, $30,000 Fidelity, and $1,150,000 Wilmington Trust bonds. Mr. James?
Aye.
Mr. Baker?
Aye.
Mr. Lawson?
Aye.
Mrs. Burlington?
Aye.
Mr. Leahy?
Aye.
Mrs. Messick?
Aye.
And I vote yes. Motion carries. Thank you.
You know how we stand now as far as our funding percentage? Or just a... Are we still in the 90% range with the smoothing and everything? I know we should be still up there, I think. It's on here. I didn't read it.
What was that question? I'm sorry, I didn't hear the beginning.
Our funding percentage of where we should be, according to the actuary, are we still in the 90% range with the smoothing?
We're still in the smoothing loss. We're still taking a smoothing loss of the 24% we lost in 08, which is maybe, you know, 4 or 5% over the years. So it will bring it under the 8%.
Well, I mean the funding.
Funding ratio.
92%. Ratio. I didn't use the right term.
Oh.
The
percent funded of the.
Yeah, that's what I'm
I don't. Other than the actuary, I don't. It's in the high 90s.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. I didn't
right,
say that.
I'm right. Sorry. Yeah.
In the 70s for the OPEB, right?
Yes.
Which
high
is,
70s.
Which is extraordinary.
93%.
Extraordinary in a positive sense.
77%. Yeah. Of course, they will come in this year. But remember, last year we had the two contributions extra from the general fund to the pension fund. Almost $1 million each, which went in to help shorten that gap.
It's really astounding what it was just a few years ago, the OPEB. I mean, it was nothing like it is now. It's really come up. It's good to see, obviously.
So the next thing is just to talk about the meeting dates. Last year was the first year, and we had the new board members. And what I'd like to do, or take comment on, is send out an email with suggested dates. Again, making them match the quarter ends. So we're looking at February, May, August, and November. November kind of has to be in there because we have to get our pension paid or contribution paid by December. So. I think those dates work kind of well. So what I'll do is send an email out so that if anybody knows a block of time, they absolutely won't be here on vacation. We can adjust at this point, but once we set it, we'll set it. And then any goals that you want to talk about, I've heard a lot today, the investment policy statement we'll look at first up, and looking at that fixed income, the actual specifics, the detail of the fixed income, and see if we can't come up with something that gives us some more return. And the actuary.
Susie, did you get a chance to check into the new actuary at all? You mentioned last meeting.
I didn't.
Yeah, it's.
I haven't yet. We're still with Aon. Yeah.
It's involved trying to get all that done. You know,
Was it Chiron who we were looking at? Or
Aon. Oh. Aon is who we have.
So you have, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know Wilmington changed their actuary too. Just so everyone knows, this, we end up, although not covering it formally, informally through questions, this is an education piece on, actually talked about actuarial assumed rate of returns. I think the graphic, if you look to page, say, 4 and 5, I think it's a very good way to help people understand what the issues are. So if, may I have 2 minutes, Susie? Or, okay. Okay, so just go to page 4, and you can, if you're so inclined, read the pages in front of it. But think of that as that's the system, okay? That big bucket, that plate, you know, that is the obligation that's owed, okay? So that's the green and the white. The green, think of that as the assets that are in the plan to fund the obligation, okay? And the blue, and so how do you get that bucket full? Because you want that bucket full when somebody retires. The assets are there to pay for the benefit promise. It's the blue and the orange. It gets filled up either through investment earnings or county contributions. And how does it get depleted? Benefit payments and expenses, okay? And so the issue that Sussex County has to look at is, you see, and we purposely put that valve on top of that blue one, because that blue one, the actuary is assuming there's a certain amount coming in that blue pipe, 8%. But if you tighten that valve a little bit and you constrict what goes in by your asset allocation mix, by your fixed income, you know, guidelines, then not as much is going to go in to the blue, through the blue pipe. So then two things happen. That means there's more that has to come in through the orange pipe, and also means there's less in the bucket itself. So I think it's a very nice sort of graphic that sort of helps tell the story. So you have to decide, do I want to open up the valve some, not, or do I understand that I'm just going to have to put more in through, more is going to have to come in through the orange pipe?
I thought it was funny when I saw it, because depending on who your audience is, they're seeing that spigot somewhere else.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe we could do a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Yeah, and many that's times that's the right, yeah. What, unfortunately, what's happening is some municipalities out there are saying, let's just open that pipe even further. But, you know, you open a pipe too much, you get flooded, you know. So it's, you know, and that's not what you want to have happen either, because that's not good either, obviously. It can be worse. Meaning, if you get too aggressive, you could have a market like 2008, and then you have to put even that much more in through the orange pipe.
If we did go to, with a lower percentage rate, we would, of course, have enough to pay our pensioners, and but we would have also excess funds, I would assume, to invest if we did that. I mean, because we would probably be a larger contribution each year, so we'd have, you know, somewhat of an excess to, right now we'd be kind of paying out, you know, what we've been, you know, taking in. We would have a little more money for investment also.
Yeah, and I think that's part of what you need to build into your expectations, is that there probably has to be a little bit more coming in that orange pipe, you know.
It'd be nice to have, yeah, I know. Of course, you want to hurt the budget, but I mean, if it's affordable.
Well, that's why it's a balancing act.
Yeah, that's a trade-off somewhat.
Anybody want
finance director knows.
Anybody want to comment on the meeting dates or goals for next year that... an email out, and you'll be at the meeting, the council meeting, because they'll have their annual review.
Yeah. Do we have a date set for that, or
you and I can get together? I don't, because November is kind of off with all the dates, and Christmas, we've got a long break for Christmas. I want to back it up. I don't want to go to the last one of the year. I always leave myself a week. I think we talked about the 27th or the 2nd. We like the 2nd.
Second, yeah.
Didn't we, Nancy?
4th.
Yeah, the 27th wouldn't work for
okay.
me, but that next week. Yeah.
So what I'll do is I'll write all this up in a short story and present it to council for the recommendations of the changes and the contribution, and Pierce Park Group will do probably much like what you did today.
I'll have a place
but
to
shorter.
Stay. By that point, if it's after November 30th, I'll have a place to stay about 15 minutes from here.
Okay.
I've noticed that. Since Mike's been here and making recommendations, it's much easier to pass something because we have an expert rather than, you know, layman.
And I think they like asking the questions that are just are investing questions in general and like asking somebody that is in the business
mm-hmm.
all the time
mm-hmm.
that can add some, you know, a little bit different perspective.
Well, you know, an expert is anybody that travels 50 miles and carries a briefcase. So.
I think it's great having Linda and Hugh on the.
Yeah.
Yes.
I do too. Yeah,
absolutely.
That's true.
Yes.
Perspective on it.
Yes.
Okay. Any more comments? And
is your new house in this within the city of Lewis?
I'm not sure if we're technically just inside. We're not. It's a mile walk to the. I know it's a mile walk to get my iced tea in the morning. So I fit right there on Market Street. We're in Pilot Reserve,
yeah,
so we're right off of New Street. So if you
New Road.
Off of New Road, I mean, yes.
Yeah, you might be near where my son lives.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I think you're in the city, so, but the county won't receive the transfer tax.
Oh,
we receive it, but we give it to the city and the state.
Okay. Tried to help.
And
you'll
meeting adjourned at 11:35.
You'll get my county taxes, right?
Thank you both.